Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Do you enjoy FilmSack? Well, we enjoy making it. Did you know that two of us have a regular morning show Monday through Thursday at the Frog Pants Network? Did you know that? Myself, Scott Johnson, and Brian Ibbett, every day since 2011, we do a show. You can find details at frogpants.com/TMS today.
Right now, we're at the largest producer of fusion energy in the world. The energy of the sun, trapped in rock, harvested by machine from the far side of the moon. Today, we deliver enough clean-burning helium-3 to supply the energy needs of nearly 70% of the planet. Who'd have thought? All the energy we ever needed, right above our heads. The power of the moon. The power of our future.
Are you sure?
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 458. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, he floats around with a permanent smiley face on as well, Dunaway.
Emoji. Oh, hi. Warning, this intro may contain spoilers about this past week's The Masked Singer. Intro responsibly. Now on with the show.
Okay.
Hello, Eartha. Hello, Clona. Here I am on Sarangamuna. Anywho, the helium-3 that we are mining to power 70% of Earth should be arriving shortly after this message. Well, thanks again for the almost live broadcast of The Masked Singer. I totally was not expecting to see Sarah Palin perform Baby Got Back in a bear costume. My tummy may never recover. Uh-oh, here comes the blood pukes. Addendum. I was doing some reading in the operations manual on Gertie. I don't see anything in here about a suck cut. I'm starting to think Gertie may be operating outside his programming. I first got suspicious when Gertie crawled into bed with me the other night and offered a personal manscaping suck cut. Flo-bee be damned. Over and out, rock and roll, God bless America.
It was a Flo-bee. It was a total Flo-bee.
Yeah, totally had a Flo-bee.
Yeah. No, yeah, just a sorry, suck cut. Wrong. Yeah, it was a suck cut. Thank you.
Yeah, right.
It was a suck cut.
It was a suck cut. All right. Well, with us also...
Is that the difference between the slanket and the snuggie?
Oh, are those... Is there still slankets? Can I get a slanket?
Yeah. Okay. Can we get a slanket? Can we get through the greetings before we...
I like the slanket thing is interesting. All right, back to this point here. Also with us, Randy, I think there might be two of him, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian.
Randy.
And have I got a deal for you. Now, as everybody knows, helium-3 fusion fuel has given us the energy the Earth needs to do whatever we want, except convince people to go work on the moon. Well, I think you're going to change your mind and take this job once you hear my three reasons to go to the dark side. Number one, the moon is actually a really great place to be. It appears to have regular gravity, So much so that a speed bag works the same as it does on Earth. Number two, we're giving you full use of a speed bag and also a ping pong table. Did you know that you can play ping pong on the moon? Why is that there? We have no idea, but you should go to the moon and find out. And number three, you get exclusive access to a psycho personal assistant robot. This robot does everything. It talks to you. It holds your coffee cup for you just as well, or maybe even better than a table ever could. And it's capable of disobeying its own programming. How can you refuse this offer?
You can't. You can't.
You can't. I was concerned about that coffee tray on him.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. I think it's actually a CD-ROM tray that,
exactly.
that Sam never figured out was just for CD-ROMs.
I have thoughts about ceiling-based robots. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh.
Also with us. Yeah, he was in the ceiling the whole time. Also with us, Brian, he looks like a radioactive tampon Ibbot.
He does. Let's continue the trifecta, shall we?
Yes.
This is the personal log for Sam Bell for Thursday, April 9th, 2035. Well, it's about 2 years and 10 months into my time here. So in 2 months, I'm going to be making my way back to Earth. Can't wait. First thing I'm going to do is swing by Kmart to pick up some snacks and then go to a Blockbuster Video to rent a movie. Anyway, noticed something weird the other day. Gertie's display screen must have been malfunctioning, but I could have sworn I saw what looked like a picture of an eggplant on his screen when he was talking to me. Anyway, got to run and check the harvester on the northwest side. Sam Bell's personal log for Saturday, April 11th, 2035.
Oh, it continues.
Oh, it's more.
Continues. Yeah, there's definitely some big secret thing that's being kept from me, and I'm going to find it out. I came back early from some routine maintenance on the rock thrower, and I heard Gertie talking to home base on a live feed. Then why am I only getting reruns of Bewitched and the Mary Tyler Moore Show if I can see something newer?
Right.
Sam Bell's personal log for Tuesday, April 14th, 2035. I finally figured out what they've been hiding from me all these years, and it's pretty damn shocking. You see, there was this actor in the 90s named Kevin Spacey. Anyway, he did some bad stuff to a kid, and instead of jail time, they stuck him in a metal box with a coffee cup holder on it and shipped him up here to take care of the lunar base for the last 30 years. Come to think of it, that explains why Gertie sounds like a depressed Kevin Spacey.
Right? In our defense, we did have the trifecta.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a very limited cast and a very limited subject.
Exactly. We kind of all had to settle in on.
Right.
Yeah, but Brian, you obeyed the Ibbot obeyed the law of threes.
That's right.
3 days, three personal logs.
Yeah. Well done. If you were Mario,
I don't obey the rule of threes.
If he was Mario, Bowser would be dead by now. Or moving on to the next level.
I do scattershot comedy. That's what
I'm
I
sorry,
do.
The clones are in another moon base.
Yeah, well done. Very, very well done. The movie is Moon. It is the 2009 film directed by Duncan Jones, son of famous musician
David Bowie.
Yep.
Yeah.
He made a movie about the moon, and which I always thought was cool in a way because, his dad was famous for that ground control.
Space. Had a lot of space related songs, not just Space Oddity, but Ashes to Ashes was the continuing story of Major Tom and Starman, the man who fell to Earth. I mean, David Bowie wanted to go to space.
Yeah,
and
sure.
He did.
I like that a lot. And I just think it's a cool thing that maybe the best, certainly the best thing he's done so far, maybe the best thing he ever does in his career is this film Moon is a nice, I don't know, weird sort of tribute.
Did you guys see Mute? On Netflix?
Never saw Mute.
And I looked for that. When we finished watching Moon, I went right over back to Netflix and searched for Mute. And it's not, Mute.
Yeah. I was spelling it wrong.
What did you search for?
Did you search for Moot? Did you search for Moot? Please say you searched for Moot.
I forgot the notes. I swear to God, I searched for Mule.
Oh, that's hilarious. Dang it. Close enough.
Because he was like a helium.
He was
mule.
A mule, right?
Yeah.
But he was Mute.
Yeah.
Why the hell did I search for Mule? Oh my God.
I haven't seen
Mule.
So I
guess Mule probably is on Netflix.
You've been at your house too long, just like being stuck on the moon. You've been at home for too long.
I think so. I keep seeing hallucinations of this woman walking around the house.
Right.
So wait a minute.
Today is day 17 of my personal isolation, and I know that because there are exactly 17 little smiley faces on the wall next to me.
Oh, geez. I noticed in a scene, I sent you guys a picture of it in our chat, but you could tell they'd done some takes, I guess.
Well, the idea is that the idea is Gertie's not good at covering up stuff.
That's what I think, too. I think it's a situation where they just wipe it over so that the next
They established earlier that it was there fully.
This is one of those movies. This is one of those movies I knew was good, but here's the problem. There's so much I don't remember. And at the other end of it, I know it's good. Like, I'm like, yeah, this is a great movie. This is one of my favorite sci-fi movies. But if you'd asked me the day before I watched it again yesterday, maybe this is just me, but I would have had a really hard time telling you everything. And I had forgotten that there were this whole basement full of clones. I forgot about that.
That's funny, because there were other things that I forgot on the second viewing, because this is only my second viewing of the movie. Same. I'd forgotten about the model of Fairfield. I'd forgotten about...
I had forgotten he was a clone. How top that.
I'm with you too.
I was trying to remember if the misdirection was he was a clone, or if the misdirection was that Gertie was actually, he was reset. I totally forgot about it. I couldn't remember if it was the.
I thought he was just crazy and was talking to himself again. That's what basically what happened is, you know, in the first part of the movie before you know about the clones, you don't know if that's really a clone. You think he's just seeing things. He's talking to himself now or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm into this one. It was actually kind of great because it was almost like seeing it for the first time again. I'd forgotten about the twists and the turns and the stuff. And when it would happen, I go, oh yeah, right. And then another thing would happen. Oh sure. Okay. I got it now. And that's a weird thing for me because normally with movies like this, I don't forget the major throughput of the story. Yeah. I don't know what happened there to me.
So one thing about it is this is like at the height of the new sci-fi craze, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of new sci-fi that no one cares about, but there's a few movies that kind of made it that really sort of like hit the top tier during, I don't know, a 10-year period or something where all the filmmakers originally saw 2001 when they were like six. Yeah. And now they're finally getting a chance to make their own whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would actually put this in like maybe the top three or four. Sunshine is up there. Mm-hmm. What's the?
I love Sunshine. I love Sunshine so much. I thought of Sunshine while watching this. By the way, there was a couple of moments.
I've never gotten back to trying to watch Sunshine after I got that DVD that didn't work in my PlayStation.
Nah.
Or Blu-ray that didn't work in my PlayStation.
You should watch it.
Well, they all
want to watch it.
Yeah.
They all have this like conceit that you have to give up on, and I couldn't. And that's the thing that I wish I could have watched Moon and just gone with it. But the whole time, I'm just like, oh, Moon gravity don't work like that. Oh, come
right,
on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and I actually was able to wave that away in my head, believe it or not.
And the moment when it works the greatest is when you see those rock harvesters and you see all of their detritus floating back behind them. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, but what part of the moon?
Down.
What part of the moon gravitated through you? Because I didn't even think about it. What was
ping pong? Are you kidding?
Well, yeah, like, but
in the base station itself.
Yeah, the base
is artificial gravity.
Yeah, the base is artificial gravity.
Which is a leap that you just made without being told or shown.
It's easy to make gravity in space because you can rotate a ship, right? But actually, on a body. It would be hard to call it a leap. Right?
I mean, you don't see him floating around or like pushing off from one wall to go to the other wall. Like, I don't feel like that's a leap.
No, it's not a leap.
It's artificial gravity.
It's not a leap. It's an assumption. I wouldn't call it a leap. I assumed it because, hey, we're in the future where this really smart robot can do the stuff he does.
Yeah.
He's out there harvesting the thing.
The future of the year 2026.
Well, it was like 20... out there.
That's another thing. I've said it so many times on this show. If you're going to set your stupid movie in the future, go far. Don't set it 15 years in the future.
Well, it's 2035, it says.
2035, I don't actually have an issue with it being that close, that nearby in the future, even for 2009, because you want to still have some of those... you don't want to go so far that you've got to create a whole bunch of new other new concepts. Technology that you can't
I'm saying you don't need to have that worry at all. Like, I'm saying that 100 years in the future actually isn't going to look that different than right now. Like that's what I'm saying. And
saying it'd be easy to just set it 100 years in the future, more believable.
Well, right. I mean, when 2035 comes, you won't be. Here's what happens when the year comes that a movie is pretending to be in, we all roll our eyes and go, Blade Runner was so wrong about the year 2020 or 2010 mm-hmm, or whatever.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Or Back to the Future couldn't have been more wrong about 2015 and that sort of thing. I get it when we get there, but when we're 35 years out, it doesn't bother me until we get there. Like,
that's the thing. Just put it beyond your own death. Like, if I was Duncan Jones, I would want the movie to happen in a year that I won't be around to see how wrong I was.
Or would you want to, as a creator, do a thing that you think, maybe I'll be around there. That'll be funny if my movie, my movie's year comes up. That'll be a huge meme. Everyone will talk about it. Hey, this is the year the moon happened, and I'll be alive to see it. I don't know. I wouldn't mind if I was Duncan Jones.
Eventually, we're going to get to every movie that's set in the future. We personally won't, but will get to every future year that a movie is set and say, yeah, they missed the boat on this one. It's just kind of like something you just got to accept.
Yeah.
This is an interesting question that we don't have any data for. It's like, will people still be watching movies from now, 100 years from now? Because if you go back and look at what movies were available to us 100 years ago, we're hitting close to The Wizard of Oz, but how many other movies can you name that were from, you know, the 1920s that you would actually still watch? Will it still be watchable? Will we be using a different medium? I mean,
there'll be film sack in it is what they'll do.
I'm saying you're activating the core of my argument right now, which is that our last 100 years has seen a tremendous amount of change in like 3 to 5 year increments, like just every 5 years for the most of the 20th century, tremendous change. Nowadays, not so much. Mm. There really isn't much change going on. You go back 5 years ago, I plop you down, you don't really see a difference. And that's what I'm getting at. Like that change in how everything looks and everyone talks and works, it's slowing down. And so you could set your movie in 2107 right now and just make it look kind of like it.
Here's all you have to do. This is the easy thing. They just don't need to tell us when the thing happened anymore. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yes, right. Exactly.
Yeah, there was no reason to for this one, right?
Yeah. Just let it live.
And did they in the movie or did they just, was it just in the notes that, you know, Duncan Jones was saying, yeah, this is probably going to be about 2035.
Probably.
Because I don't remember actually in the movie there being.
The only year I remember seeing in the movie was 2026. I don't know where I saw it. I saw it on a panel or something.
Well, it may have been that.
That might have just been panel 2026.
Yeah, but
No, it was a year. There was a date somewhere in this movie.
It could be also saying it's 2026 when all of the Sams are being convinced that they're in a certain time. So, yes. So it right. could, if they were saying 2026, what's 15 years from that?
2041.
Yeah, so that's not quite there. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if that baby girl, oh, no, that makes sense. Because 2035, she was about 5 years old when he's looking at her video. And if it's 2035, so he's 15 years in the future and not knowing it. He thinks he's still back then. And I love that part of it. That's a great thing. And maybe you do have to have a year reference to make that work in people's brains, but I don't know if they needed it here. They probably could have gotten away without saying it. I don't know.
You're reminding me of my favorite trope in the whole movie. Let's play this aspect of it, which is you got to take your iPad outside the prison to get a signal. Oh my God. That made me so happy that he drives off the reservation in order to get the iPad to uplink.
You call that chunky ass freaking military ass phone an iPad. Right, yeah. That thing was awesome. I love that like industrial strength moon phone. That thing was one of my favorite props in the whole. I would love to have that as like
everything about that. I just thought you just grin on my face seeing that whole sequence.
Well, maybe. I was just hoping at some point she was gonna say, "Ugh, you're not my real dad."
Yeah, you're not my real dad. Right. Okay, wait. So I got a question about that. This is a plot dissection, but when he calls her and talks to her, she's now 15. Mom's died a few years ago. And then she goes, "Dad, some weirdo's on the thing." And is that a fake Sam?
No, that's the real Sam. The original one is what it is.
That's the original Sam. So he exists.
The OG Sam.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Because I heard
1.0.
Because the voice was clearly him. And I went, okay, well, there's Sam Rockwell. So here comes another clone that they just are lying to everybody.
Right.
By the way, the two guys that are lying to everybody are Benedict Wong and Matt Berry from the IT Crowd.
Yeah, I saw that. He's one of them's the manager in the later seasons, right?
Yeah, no, those two are great because what a perfect combo. I love both those actors. So
Matt, I need to go back and watch those because I started watching them, enjoyed them, but something else at the time was like, oh no, I need to watch this now. Yeah. And it's spoiled and I need to go back.
It's Matt Berry from What We Do in the Shadows, my friends. Yeah. And he so deserved more lines in this movie. Like, just imagine if they'd returned to him and he was trying to defend his company's position at the very, very end. Oh,
we needed a better picture of him because I didn't even recognize him until he spoke. No. And I was like, oh
no, it's so pixely. I mean, obviously as it would be, but yeah, you don't realize. I didn't realize it was Benedict Wong until I saw the credits.
He's a lot younger in 2009 and not so beefy, but
we're all younger in 2009.
That's true. Benedict Wong was also in Sunshine. So when you watch that, you'll be like, oh, there's Benedict Wong again. But anyway, what I was going to say about something about that, what was I going to say? I forgot what it was.
Benedict Wong, What We Do in the Shadows.
I don't remember now.
We were talking about what Sam Rockwell, Sam Bell was doing on Earth.
I don't know.
15-year-old daughter.
I don't remember.
The connection for iPad.
Hold on. The connection for me there was the what's basically the last of the new sci-fi generation, which is The Martian. And in The Martian, you have people on Earth who are, some of whom aren't doing the best job. And you get a lot of exposition around them. And that's why on this watching I just wanted more of the people on Earth. I realized that this movie,
then watch Mute.
Oh yes, definitely.
Don't watch Mule though, because that's
right, that's not it.
No,
yeah, it's a very different film.
Yeah.
Mute is set in the same universe.
Oh, it is. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's cool.
It is. And
it's
actually
kind of a sequel, and it's a bunch of Sam Rockwell, right?
Oh, shit, I didn't know this.
That's why I was like so bummed when I looked for it and I couldn't find it. But
you're finding this Clint Eastwood movie you can't rent anywhere. Yeah,
right, exactly.
All right. So Benedict Wong, I just want to make another point. He was also in The Martian. I'm starting to wonder if everybody wants to hire Benedict Wong for their space movies because he's in all of these things.
Right.
That's crazy.
You know who looks like needs to be in space? Benedict Wong.
I love
him in there.
I freaking love that guy. I really do love his presence. And in this movie, you barely see him. So it's not really, I don't think you can count it as much. But I just wanted to point that out. Those two guys are there. That's a good catch.
Yeah.
Well done.
Mm-hmm. Good catch. Yeah.
Did you guys discuss,
I lost my headphones for a couple of seconds there. Did we discuss who was in the chair that he saw? Was that supposed to be was that supposed to be Eve?
Oh yes, chicken in the bucket.
That's the only unexplainable part of the movie, or not really unexplainable, because he's having hallucinations because he's been up there for so long. But I really didn't feel like we needed that, right? Because that wasn't the hallucination he has of the girl in the chair, and when he sees a body in standing out next to the rock harvester. Right. That wasn't like you're saying, oh, that was like time travel, or that was one of his other clones that he was seeing, and blah, blah, blah. It was just kind of unnecessary. Yeah, you've been up here a long time.
Right. Well, I was trying to figure out if it was supposed to be Little Eve and that maybe he was implying that there was some kind of connectivity between clones and human, because he would never have seen Eve as she is now, but is there some kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it was a roughly, teenage girl with long and dark hair that looked
it
like
it wasn't clear.
Wonder Dog, don't you know it's dangerous to leave a bucket lying around?
She's our chick in the bucket.
She is a chick in the bucket. Yeah, that's totally a chick in the bucket.
Because if she had never... Well, okay, so the one way you could chalk it up, and this is the problem with the clones, we don't know a lot about how those clones are made. Are they purely synthetic? Are they actual genetic material, and it's a human, and they're just, they've got the same memories? Seems like there's some programming going on there, and there were some allusions to that when he was talking to the Kevin Spacey bot. About it,
Kevin Spacey.
If you're writing any kind of fiction, and you're gonna have people who don't know who they are or what they are, don't implant memories. I hate implanted memories.
Really?
That's just bullshit.
I don't know.
Didn't bother me. Huh. I don't mind it when they're like I kind of like the when his console would show a hairy beard version of him for a hot second. Yeah. He's like, what the frick was that?
Yeah,
and
that was Gertie trying to save, because this should be at this point, this should be third clone, right? Or fourth clone.
We're going from fourth to fifth in this one.
Well, I know that, but he's giving... That should be clone number three that he's showing
on the screen. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it could have been the original acting. We don't really know.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't know. But the point is that what it seems to me is what they're trying to say. And maybe they don't make it explicit enough. But it seems like Gertie is, if anything, this movie's about Gertie gaining
humanity,
sympathy and empathy.
Right.
And humanity.
Yeah. Humanity.
And so he's
earning it.
So he's like, all right, quick little flicker here. He's the one implanting the memories. He's the one putting the stuff in there. Now, whether that has anything to do with the daughter, I'm not claiming, but right. The daughter thing was weird. It was like when he was driving the thing before he crashed it and he saw her out there in the
right
standing there or whatever. I assume that was her.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
that's a weird thing.
And I'll
to
follow
do.
This. I've actually got the answer if you want it.
Go.
Oh, you got the answer. According to
a Den of Geek interview with Duncan Jones, they ask him the question in the film itself: why did Sam hallucinate seeing his teenage daughter near the start of the film? Was this ever intended to be picked up on more explicitly? And he talks about, you know, being hard science fiction, and he kind of wanted to touch into soft science fiction, which is more fantastical. Right. He says, right. You hear stories of identical twins then when they're separated, sensing or having a feeling or awareness of anything major traumatic that happens to their identical twin, even if they're not in contact. So the idea is that Sam on the base is able to sense and feel that there exists a daughter, a girl, which is the daughter of the original Sam back on Earth. That's how they're all connected. And that's why Sam's having these visions, because this girl means so much to the original Sam. So according to Duncan Jones, according to the source.
Oh, whatever. I'm not buying it.
It is twin telepathy, basically.
Okay. Twin. Yeah. So they're all the clones are basically twins of one another. And if this is a thing like that intuition that twins have, if you can really say that's a thing, they all share it. And some are going to have it maybe more prominently than others because, I don't know, some form of natural selection in a small way.
There's also a cool, subtle thing about clones in this movie, and that is that the reason it's a 3-year tour is because the clone degrades. And the movie doesn't beat you over the head with that. It's not terrible. It's definitely depicted. When Sam Rockwell pulls a freaking tooth out of his mouth, and stares at it, or he actually pulls it out of a toilet and then stares at it.
Yeah. What do we even need to go into what grossed Scott out the most?
All right. So the grossest thing in this movie, I wrote it three times. Sorry. The first one was, now I look back and I was such an innocent child before I found out the other gross things. I wrote gross smudge marks all over his bed walls. So in his walls, he's got like black smudge marks everywhere. Yeah. And I thought, dude, nobody should be living like that. And then later.
Oh, there's smudge marks all over the damn place.
Yeah. And then later, blood vomit in your helmet. Pretty gross. And then finally, toilet view, fishing out a tooth. This is the gross part, is what I wrote.
This is the winner.
Yeah.
Here's your crown.
Fishing a tooth out of your blood vomit.
Oh, your crown. Well done.
Yeah. Wow. Nice job. Well done. So anyway, that was gross. And we should acknowledge how gross that was. However, I like that the movie didn't beat you over the head quite yet with it. I thought it was maybe radiation poisoning, because what they don't tell you at corporate is that he's constantly exposed to this helium-3 and basically you're harvesting the sun's energy from moon rock and transferring it to Earth, and that process is going to kill you. So even when the clone part started kicking in, I'm like, oh. And this may still be it, by the way. It may not be that they're degrading because they can't keep them for more than 3 years. It may just be that the work they're out there doing exposes them to stuff that their bodies can't deal with after about 3 years.
Right, exactly. The clones are more susceptible to the radiation of the base on the moon, and that's why they're degrading so fast.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of my take. I hadn't really considered that it was these all have an expiration of 3 years, but maybe that's the
overall,
case.
It's a hard sell, because the ultimate, like the baseline problem that is solved by the clones is that nobody can be made to go do this job. And that's just nonsense. We live on a planet where there's people who can be tricked into eating Tide Pods. I promise you, there are human beings who would go do this job.
Right.
So, like, I was curious
about the cost of transportation.
Like, he talks about how much would it cost to train somebody, then fly them to the moon, and then, you know, have to fly them back. This takes out all three of those things. You train one guy.
You, That works until the end of the movie when the Marines show up and you're like, oh, right, that's right. They have almost free energy on that planet. They can come to the moon anytime they want.
Well,
I'm saying.
But the idea is that you, I mean, maybe it's a loose conceit, but the conceit is that you, that nobody would do this job because you will die up there. So that's why I think it actually supports my theory about the radiation, because nobody can live very long up there because of this. So it's hazardous. So you get one guy cloned and in constant, you know, reformation down up there, and then you don't tell anybody because it goes against all sorts of humanity, you know, crimes against humanity rules. And so that's why at the end you get all the news people kind of montage as the ships or as the his little pod is flying toward the planet. You hear it going, today the company's answering grave allegations of human cloning for the use of blah, blah, blah. Like there's crimes against humanity happening up there. That's why it's a big deal. Like, I don't think anybody, those guys that went up there briefly, they're just going up, they're going up there to just keep everybody happy. They're just like cleaners.
Yeah, they're kind of like, all right, well, emergency situation. They figured out he's become aware of what's going on. We need to take him out.
Yeah, and they go up and they think he's dead. Yeah, and it's perfect. It's one of my favorite endings to a film because they get there. It's all perfect. He's back in the shitty seat, crashed and dead. There's another fresh one on the table. It looks like you've done it. Meanwhile, Sneaky Pete's flying back to Earth going, woo, 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 woo.
And I broke the jammer. Woo.
That was the most Sam Rockwell moment.
It really was.
The
film.
The second most was when he was dancing to his own little clock radio. But first was him going woo in the capsule. Yeah. That was awesome.
He was really, really good in this. And a lot of movies have one actor playing two people and it kind of works, but you're never quite out of your head that he's not both there at the same time.
Right.
This movie was pretty freaking good for such a low budget. The thing was made for $5 million.
And they did a good job of differentiating the two Sams, not just physically, you know, with blood and getting worse and worse looking health-wise, but also even just kind of the stance. Like, you know, one of them, the one that's been there a while, more hunkered down a little bit. The one that is fresh and brand new is standing upright and hasn't had the 3 years of working on the moon. Like the other
still
one has.
Still a young man.
Angry young man.
Yeah.
It's just,
young man.
Just and they play a card that I think is pretty ingenious, although maybe a little cheap. But your assumption is the minute you see the Kevin Spacey bot, you're like, okay, well, don't trust that thing. And then later when it's talking to those people and it doesn't know that Sam Rockwell's woken up and starting to work his way around the hall, and then he pretends like he, you know, wasn't on that call, you're like, oh, yeah, evil robot. We're back to HAL 9000 or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is one of those deals.
There was misdirection there, and I think that's what confused me, is because I thought the misdirection was that the robot was going to be evil, and of course he ended up being not, and actually gained humanity and earned it and was reciprocated whenever they took the kick me sign off the back of Gertie. Right. But I was thinking that for some reason, I was thinking that maybe he was a cyborg. Sam was for some reason. I don't know why I was thinking that. I was like, why did we establish that Gertie could cut hair unless we were going to try to explain why Sam Rockwell's character was out for so long? There's a lot of misdirection that made me, that was good. Well played.
Yeah,
well played.
Really well played. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was good. And also, but not the kind of thing like a lot of the Shyamalan style twist that they do in the end of his movies. They make it so you just can't watch it again and enjoy it as much. Right. Like Sixth Sense is an amazing film, but the second time is not because it's bad, but because you already know. So all of that lead up, it doesn't have the payoff. This thing still works, I think.
I think even works better. Like, you know, you hear the music that he wakes up to on his clock radio is a song called "I'm the One and Only," and I think that's a really clever touch, like a little nod to the.
I was gonna ask you. Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up. Let me find this clip real fast. Let's see here, where did I put this? I made a clip for it. Okay, here it is. So I was gonna make you name that tune, but you obviously know it.
Well, no, I just heard the lyrics. I actually don't recognize the song at all.
I remember this when I was in high school, but here it is.
Oh, really?
Okay. It's some hair bandy.
Well, thing. No, it's not. And here's where I'm going to be the most embarrassed I've ever been on Film Sack.
What?
That is, I just looked it up. That's actually Nick Kershaw, one of my favorite artists. I followed his music.
Your favorite guy.
Since the 80s, after Wouldn't It Be Good, I actually continued buying his music and you know, I still buy everything he puts out, sight unseen. Yeah. And apparently it's one of his more, you know, one of his
But really? it's not
really funny.
I mean, Nick Kershaw wrote the song, but that's a Chesney Hawkes song.
Really? No, it's not. Is it?
Yeah. The singer is Chesney Hawkes.
Oh.
100%.
Written by Nick Kershaw, performed by Chesney Hawkes. Okay.
Well, now, interesting. Now we're even more embarrassed. I'm more embarrassed.
Maybe that's why you didn't recognize it.
Maybe that's why, because it's a cover then, because once I saw that Nick Kershaw did it, I'm looking back in my library right now, and I'm seeing that he does do the song.
I know this song, but I have it in my brain. It is directly tied to my youth, but you're saying it's newer than that.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the, let's see here.
Because it feels like 80s to me.
Well, it's close, feels right? 80s, like,
which is great.
Like very early 90s, right?
When did it come out? I don't know, but it's got that.
I'm pulling up the album right
now.
I'm
definitively saying very early 90s.
All right, so Randy says 90s. I say 80s. Let's see how we did.
Oh, no, for sure 90s. And maybe even early 2000s.
Very early. I'm gonna say
definitely a throwback sound if it is.
Exactly. Anyway, that's the thing that's throwing us.
Why. It's
intentionally
just, you're also hearing it
retro.
On an FM radio, like, or on a tinny.
Yeah, he had a shitty. See.
Not even a tinny. It was a clock that a wind up clock. It looks like
it did look like one.
I'm not finding. You know what? It's funny. I'm not finding. Oh, I guess I'm way off. It is 90s.
Yeah.
It was recorded, released in 1991.
All right. That sounds right then.
It didn't sound right when I said it.
Mm-hmm. No. You said 90s. I agree with you.
It but still 90, doesn't sound right. Say it again, Randy.
No, the reason I'm saying that is 91 sounds like the zone. That's right around the zone.
Right. And
end of high school, early college.
Yeah. And. I guess it's, it's funny. It's background music for a game being played in the Jones 2018 film Mute, not Mule.
So he just reused that license.
So I think I must have heard it on a Nick Kershaw B-side. So I, you know what? I'm not as embarrassed because apparently it's not one of Nick Kershaw's actual singles.
Yeah.
So I feel a little bit better about
myself. Yeah, redemption.
I'm embarrassed for you, so it's all good.
It's all right. That's fair.
But I'm in a constant state of embarrassment about me, so don't worry about it.
We've seen Source Code. Anyone who's seen Source Code?
Never saw Source Code. It's the one with
what?
The...
Haven't we watched it for...
No. No, that's the... What's his name? October Sky guy. What's his name?
Jake
Gyllenhaal. I don't know why I thought of October Sky.
Groundhog Day, right? Future.
Kinda. He's on a train.
And
yeah.
And
Michelle Monaghan.
To tie this all together, this is the song. The one and only is the song in Source Code.
Oh, weird. But,
it's also Duncan Jones directed.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. So it all comes together. It just makes you realize. I bet you Duncan Jones and Chesney Hawkes are like friends. I'll bet they're like tight.
There must
and
be.
They
used to come to his dad's parties or something. It's like, hey, what's going on? Yeah.
Then he's probably the only one who's ever heard of Chesney Hawkes.
Oh, come on.
No, I don't know. I'm looking at Chesney Hawkes. Do I have even any Chesney Hawkes in my library?
So this song, The One and Only, was like a number one hit.
For a moment, for like a minute.
Mm. And then I remember seeing him on this summer TV show several years ago called Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that.
It was all about one-hit wonders, and they bring him out.
Mm-hmm. And they perform. They did a new cover of something else. I have no Chesney Hawkes at all in my library of my 100 and whatever thousand songs, 105,633 songs in my library. I don't have a single Chesney Hawkes.
They only have any, he only has any, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He has 9 total singles, so it's not that brilliant of a career, but he's all right.
You know, his younger photos look like if Adam Driver and Keanu Reeves had a blonde kid.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, yeah, he totally does. Oh, my gosh. All right, nailed it. Now, he looks like a really young... oh, who's the English singer with the hair and the...
Oh, the one with the hair.
The really wild 70s
the
one era.
With the hair.
Oh, shoot.
The one with the hair.
I can't think of his name.
Enough information provided.
He's been around forever.
No results found.
It's super top 40 80s guy. I can't think of his name. I don't know why. All right. The South Park made fun of him, had him in a wheelchair all the time.
Oh, really? Oh.
Someone at home's yelling at their freaking phone right
this
now.
This was the... This was the perfect little encapsulation of Sam Rockwell's sort of acting genius in
he's so good.
Because he has to, like, he's a character that has to entertain himself. He's a character that has to do everything for himself, right?
Yeah.
Like, even allowing that there's a robot talking to him.
Not everything.
What do you mean? Not everything. What do you mean there?
Flobies. Oh. He can cut his own hair.
That is like a suck cut is exactly that. You're cutting your own hair. You're doing it for yourself, right?
Yeah.
And like, it's just hard to imagine what you like read, you know, like Sylvester Stallone was considered for this role. Like, it's hard to imagine anyone actually doing it as well as him. And in the absence of Sam Rockwell, there's no way we're talking about this movie.
I think I agree. I think I always liked him.
I think Tom Hanks could have pulled it off.
I think Ibbitt says this all the time, where he's like, everything he's in is elevated. And in this particular case, where he is everything in it, it's not like he's just making it better because he's in it. It's like a true showcase of what that dude is capable of. And I don't know.
This was written for him, right? Like, Duncan Jones basically wrote this movie.
Yeah.
With Sam Rockwell in mind as the character.
He was trying to work with him on other stuff.
And it's perfectly done.
It is.
I would actually believe more that Duncan Jones is good friends with Sam Rockwell than he's friends with Kenny Chesney.
Chesney Hawks.
I've already forgotten who this guy is, sadly.
How much of an impression
Chesney Hawks has made on me.
If you look at Rockwell's interviews, like his promotion stuff around this movie, like it's all on YouTube, you actually don't get the impression that he even really knew who Duncan Jones was before this movie. Like,
well,
the pitch was I wrote it for you, and of course, like, as an actor, you take that really seriously, right? You like, it's hard to turn down, but I don't know. Like, Rockwell doesn't sound like he loves the movie, and then later on, he finds himself at like San Diego Comic-Con 5 or 10 years later, and he's like, oh yeah, that's, you know, one of my best. Like,
well, sometimes you're too close to it, you know? You're too close to it. You've seen your own work, and you're like, eh, I don't want to look at that anymore, and it was hard. This is clearly like a labor, and I don't mean of love. Like, he labored for this role. Sometimes that puts you off for a while. You got to get away from it and then come back later and have a more objective view of things.
I would agree with you if it was a movie like the Tom Hanks one that takes a long time, but they did this in a month. Like, it was over and done so fast, you know, like 4 weeks of movie making.
Mm. Well, harder.
What's the Tom Hanks one?
Castaway.
Castaway.
Yeah. Castaway, they did like that over island. A long time because you got to get skinny and then fat and all that.
Yeah, that seems grueling to me, but I don't know about this one. Like, but having said that, and having been in isolation for 17.2 days now, I could see it being grueling. My gosh.
It's a really great role and an amazing performance, and I don't know if he was nominated for much that year, but it's a shame that he wasn't if he wasn't, because he deserves it. Didn't he win for the Ebbing Billboards deal thing?
Three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah. Certainly nominated. No, because I remember him being on stage accepting the award. Yeah, so yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Best supporting or something, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he needs to just get all awards every time he does a thing. That guy's just so freaking
absolutely
great.
Absolutely does. Yeah, just so he was good. Nominated for Vice for Best Supporting Actor. Mm-hmm. He was nominated for Fosse Verdon last year in the Emmys.
Yeah, didn't he something? Oh. The one he won for was the Bush one, right? Did you just say that? Was the one for...
He was nominated for
for Cheney's Dick.
Cheney's.
Or, what was it called?
Vice. It was called Vice.
Vice, not Dick.
No, that was a different one. But there was a movie called Dick, but
Not that movie. Oops.
Not that movie. No, he was nominated for Vice for playing W, but right. He won for Three Billboards.
So that's an impressive thing. When you play George W. Bush, you are absolutely in the territory of just mimicking, right? You're just
totally
doing that thing Bush did. To get nominated for it means you took it somewhere else, and he's just, that guy's great.
He's great, and it's sad, well, not sad, because he does such a great job of it, but it feels like in more recent movies, they've kind of used him as, we kind of need a slightly lovable racist.
Yeah.
And
okay, but I don't know. Like, I see what you're saying. I just think that Three Billboards is such a complicated movie, and those are such complicated characters that I hate to see it summarized like that.
But I'm thinking more or less the roles he's had lately are that kind of that guy, is what you're saying.
Right.
It's like there's three or Dunaway. I'm getting weird echo.
Is that coming from Dunaway?
Yeah, Dunaway's mic. Dunaway, you there?
Now.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's better.
It's better now.
I mean, well, and you know, a role where he could have played a racist, Jojo Rabbit. He's just a fun-loving, cross-dressing Nazi, gay Nazi.
Shit, I forgot he was in that. I haven't seen that yet. I need to freaking see it. What's wrong with
that? And Richard Jewell, he was in this last year as kind of the lawyer who helps Richard Jewell. Not a racist in that one. So no.
When's the last?
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. When was the last time we saw him here? I guess it was Matchstick Men. Was that the last one? I think so.
We never saw the remake of Poltergeist.
Mm-mm. Oh, I didn't know he was in that. We should see that now that he's in that.
We should see that.
Now I'm in the mood for him.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about Iron Man 2 at some point on this, because that feels like the one we could do. Yeah.
He's getting work.
Matchstick Men.
Yeah, I think that was
Hitchhiker's Guide to be a good one for Film Sec, too. Which
Hitchhiker's Guide?
Yeah. He makes a great Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Yeah, he's very good in there.
Totally agree.
I like that movie.
It's hard to come up with a lot of actors that are in his same lane. Mm. He's like the king of the Sam Rockwell lane. And it's like, when you think about it, you know, like, I guess maybe the previous generation had Gary Oldman. I don't know who it is.
Mm.
Gary Oldman's a good example. Yeah,
that's close. By the way, so there's been this big argument in Hollywood in the last few days about who should play in the dramatization version of the Tiger King, who should play freaking Joe Exotic. And the two names that keep getting bandied about are Dax Shepard, who's been very, very vocal about wanting to do it, and Edward Norton. So they're having like a fun little Twitter spat, and that's fake.
Is there any argument? Dax Shepard feels like it's the role he was made to play.
It'd be a pretty good, but I'm going to argue that Sam Rockwell could probably rock that role.
Yeah, he could do probably it. Could.
Yeah, especially who later
to
life.
Play Doc...
Oh my gosh, dude. Doc, I don't
creepy,
know.
Creepy fingers.
Do not like that guy. He gave me the willies the whole time. Dunaway, when you watch this thing, and you really should.
I am. It's on my list.
It's so weird. Everyone's weird. All right. Hey, check out this trivia. It was shot during the writer strike, the 2008 or so, whenever that was. Writer strike caused most of the production at Shepperton Studios to shut down. However, Duncan Jones says he got a number of top class effects people on the crew because of the lull. They were all like looking for work, and he's like, "All right, well, let's get the you're not writing anything. You're effects guys. Get in here." And he's an effects dude anyway. That's where he started, was getting into film, was doing special effects, and so he had an eye for it already. I think the moon stuff looks okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
I think it looks great for 2009.
Yeah, and for the budget, it was definitely better than.
And
okay,
it doesn't need to look. You know, there's not like these big special effects fight scenes or anything that happen out in space that you need, you know, you really need to worry about. He goes out there, there's less gravity, he's got to pull himself out of a rover and drive back to the base. There's not a lot of, they don't have to have a lot of great special effects for those scenes.
By the way, those harvesters were named Matthew, Luke, Mark, and John.
Nice.
Yeah, biblical, very biblical.
Every time movie is referred to in, you know, like popular media, they always say, someone always says, made for only $5 million. Like, wow, $5 million gets you some pretty good moon exteriors. I never once thought, oh, I'm looking at video game footage. Mm-hmm. You know, like, no, mm-hmm. it was pretty good.
It's pretty good,
especially for its time.
But remember, I mean, we're talking 2009 dollars. This was $5 million. Star Wars was $7.5 million in 1976. So It's wow. It's crazy to think that for under the amount that George Lucas made it all the way back then, not accounting for I have no idea what the inflation would be on that. I'm sure mm-hmm. it's a lot more, but that's still that's pretty bare bones, and it works yeah. really well. Like it the interior shots are awesome. I love that kind of dank, overly white, almost hospital style, but then mm-hmm. griming it all up with like hand marks and stuff just gives it this feeling of like, dude, you've been here for 3 freaking years and it's nasty yeah. work. And
all the technology was very boxy, very much
right.
from well, his influences of 70s.
Yeah.
And you wanted to talk about ceiling outland. Robots and the whole Gladys thing, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Gladys so I love the idea of this, and it's actually not that crazy. There's lots of like real world examples of ceiling-based robot, and it's pathing and that sort of stuff. Blade Runner 2049 did this with some pathing for the holograph chick from the ceiling. It was like a little device mm-hmm. that would move around the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And I love that because it creates both versatility and restriction. Unlike right. a robot that could just be on its bipedal feet and walk anywhere it wants to, this thing has to live in the tracks. And
right.
that's interesting to me for some reason. I don't know why. I can't really tell you really why. I just love that idea. It's just cool.
It limits Gertie's, he's not omniscient. He's limited, yeah. and we've established that by him being limited there. So
yeah, but I do like love that the moment you needed the arm, you could get it. Like, I need to pat him on the back mm-hmm. to make him feel better.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
I need to do his right. keyboard password.
The password. Or, yeah. That was great.
All the right places for that. Because
you think it might be like coming to attack him or Vulcan nerve pinch him or something, right. and like yeah. scoots by him and taps on the keyboard.
The trivia about Kevin Spacey taking this role is very much a before Kevin Spacey was revealed to be the douchebag that he is, because it says things like, was unwilling to do the VO until he had seen the completed film. And even then he had to really like it before he would agree to do any of this. I'm thinking, all right, Mr. High and Mighty, freaking.
Yeah. Yeah. But you'd take anything now, wouldn't you,
yeah.
dude?
Right.
Yeah. You'd be Gertie now, wouldn't you, buddy? Anyway.
You'd be Gertie and Gertie E.T. if you had to.
Yeah, he would if you had to. Anyway, I really liked it. I don't really have a lot of fault with it.
No.
Like, straight
no,
up.
It holds
he
up.
Was.
Yeah,
Kevin Spacey was perfect for this role, but I mean, at that time, Duncan Jones has the ultimate fallback option. You know, like he can just ask his dad to do that character.
Oh, that would have been cool.
He would have been fine.
Yeah, I would have been into that, like a David Bowie voice, a little bit modulated. That would have been rad. Listen, Sarah,
like to have some coffee?
Stop! Ah, nah, 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 nah. That'd be amazing. All right. Anything else before I move to clips? Clippies? I got clips.
Anybody else fooled by the very beginning thinking that you'd gotten to, like, you're all of a sudden seeing commercials on Netflix?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was very much Viridian Dynamics.
Just my child.
Oh, really?
he was on his way to bed. Like, I always start this thing. I always start these movies just right as he's going to bed. Yeah. And so he gets to see the first minute, which is conceivably not, R-rated, right. or mm-hmm. right? Like usually not. Most of our movies don't start off with the adult content,
right?
And so, like, I have this on, and my kid is just like, "What is this? What is the like? Why are you watching commercials?"
Yeah.
And like, the commercial here actually seems kind of modern and current now, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah. it doesn't mm-hmm. seem that far off in the future.
It seemed legit. I have when I played at the top of the show, his voice sounds like one of the Siri options. Let me just play a little bit of it again. Oh.
Right now, we're the largest producer of fusion energy in the world.
There's something about his voice.
Oh, yeah. I think, and also the alarm sound was straight out of Apple alarm noises.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
But while we're on the opening, can I have a trip alert?
Yeah, why not? Why the heck not? Hold on, I gotta find it. There it is.
Your titles that are baked into the canvas of what we're seeing.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask you guys what you thought of
those
that.
Are going to look so 2010 in a few years. They're going to look so 2010.
They don't do it as much as they used to. Yeah, there was a you know what the popular thing now is? Gigantic screen filling thick bold mm-hmm. font. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. So if it's like, "Hey, you're now in Kansas."
Establishing shot, whatever it is.
It'll say, right? "Kansas City, Missouri," in giant huge letters that are just like opaque and cover the whole screen. That's going to mm-hmm. look very 20-teens very soon. So yeah,
there was a lot of effort taken to make it so that the titles, the credits and the opening moved as the camera was moving. Yeah. That was actually really cool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that is not aging well. It is not looking good as time goes.
And they're not the only ones. Everybody does. There a whole bunch of movies did this, and none of it's going to age very well.
Yeah, we saw that in the beginning of Panic Room. Those titles that looked like they were superimposed over the city, and you're flying around them, and
They even took like shadows and stuff, and like they were in the environment. Such a weird thing.
And the thing is, you want to, your movie, when it's like this, it's a serious movie, you want it to be timeless. So I feel like that is working against your own best interest.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Then they come back again, like every intro text or whatever that Tarantino uses looks like it's ripped from 1972. Mm-hmm. And we all love it now. because it's like, oh, it's cool, it's retro. So you got to let the cycle happen.
It was made retro as opposed to making it look current. And then
one day this perspective correct floating in the real space letters will look cool again, but it won't be for a very, very long time. Right. All right, here's some clips. I don't remember most of this, so I'll just play it. Here you go.
You guys been any good parties or anything?
Like a stoner.
There's a characterization there, though, that I'm like, you know what? That guy, the guy you just heard, he would have woke up all the clones, every one of them. Yeah. He would have gone downstairs and got them all. He would have had 50 Sam Rockwell standing around. Well,
the problem is you need the robot to do it because nobody knows how to do it except Gertie, and then you need more places to do it. They only had the one place. Like I don't know if they could have done it. They'd have to just start with one and keep going, and Gertie would have to agree. So I don't know if that's as tenable as it sounds, but maybe. He had a clapper. Here's proof. I thought that made me laugh. Yeah. So the year's 2036, and you got a freaking clapper.
Right. And how come they kept playing all these old shows, but not one episode of The Honeymooners? I mean, was that just two spot on?
Pow! To the moon, Alice!
Also,
right, doesn't that get done a lot in other movies done away? Like, it feels like
absolutely. It's been, and I'm like, why would you miss this opportunity?
Yeah, maybe you had to license it and Bewitched was cheap. I don't know how that worked. Or Mary Tyler Moore, or whatever it was. Wasn't there a Bewitched?
No, it was Bewitched. And what was the other thing? I was watching a couple of things. It was Bewitched.
Mary Tyler Moore Show, for sure.
Oh, okay, so those are the two that I
possibly
recognize.
A third one.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. All right, here's chatting it up with the bot.
Morning, Gary. Morning, Sam. How are you today?
Fine. Fine.
How's the hand?
Oh, it's a little sore. A little sore. It's okay. What's for breakfast?
What's for breakfast?
What's for breakfast?
Just wants breakfast.
What's for breakfast?
I like that one.
Breakfast.
Same as always, beans in a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's
hot bag of beans.
Yeah, hot bag of beans. Really hot.
What's my sauce? No, my tummy hurts.
Oh,
tummy.
Got a soft tummy. I'm going to barf blood later. Here's Kevin Spacey saying something about beans.
Would you like some hot sauce on your beans?
Wow. That's to make it out.
A little bit, but not a euphemism.
A euphemism, but yeah.
Here is
in context.
Exactly. All right. Here is an argument about the best Pink Floyd album, but the problem is they're wrong about the name. All right. So here's that.
It's the Far Side of the Moon.
No, it's the Dark Side of the Moon, guys.
The
Dark Side.
Dark.
Searching.
Searching for long range comms. Searching for long range comms.
That would drive me nuts. Turn that shit off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We know you're searching. Just stop telling us you're doing
it. Just let me know when you get it or don't get it. Yeah.
Still searching.
I call this one the stutter sure.
Are you sure?
I like that. It's fun. Fun to hear him hitch it there a little bit in the middle. Here's another one.
What's going on?
All right. There's not.
I like that.
What's going on?
That's a very Sam Rockwell.
What's going on?
Yeah, it is very him.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This movie, I don't have. I mean, I have like two more clips. The reason I don't have like a million like I usually do is because, honestly, it's a lot of quiet time. It's, him figuring stuff out, watching video screens, driving out to places, a lot of visual
talking
moments.
Talking to his plants, talking about chocolate.
I know I didn't give it a grade yet, but the soundtrack, dude, is so good.
I loved it.
It's so good. And it's the same dude who did the music for the other movie he did. You guys keep telling me to see on Netflix.
Clint Mansell.
Yes. He's great in the, this is one of my, I didn't know I liked it so much until now. It's really good. Like quality, awesome, perfect kind of stuff. Very piano-y.
Clint Mansell is one of these people who does a lot of the same kind of stuff and sounds. Mm-hmm. And then as you go through his list, every now and then it's just, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the song is Lux Aeterna. Mm-hmm. It's not as big a deal when it's used in Requiem for a Dream. Like the movie comes out and it's kind of a hard movie to watch, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then Lux
Aeterna. Go to bed well.
Yeah. So like Lux Aeterna, but then they someone gets the bright idea of taking that song and remixing it and making it Requiem for a Tower for the trailer for The Two Towers. Mm-hmm. And then it is epic and classic. That song is now everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's like there was actually a point where I think people stopped using it because it was overexposed
too much.
Song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the 90s, when the 90s, every trailer had Blur's Woohoo in it or whatever mm-hmm. that song is called.
Yeah, or Bad to the Bone in the 80s.
Yeah, yep, that's true.
Looking through my list, most underrated Clint Mansell score is for The Wrestler.
It's check very that good.
Out. It's,
yeah.
It's really good.
It's very, very good. He's got his own album he put out last year, too, that's just original stuff. It's also very good. I kind of went down a hole with this guy. He's awesome. All right, here's talking to himself about whether he's comfy or not.
You comfy?
No.
What?
No.
I loved it. It's like I laughed so hard.
Yeah,
no.
It's
no.
It's really good. And when you know that they're it's just him in two different takes, it's even better.
Mm-hmm.
He's so
they
good.
They do a really good job of having him play ping pong with himself. I was thinking about this watching yesterday, just finished up the last season of The Deuce, which has two James Francos mm-hmm. in it.
Yeah.
And in the third season, they do a great job. They actually have the two of them hug and, you know, one plants a kiss on the other one in kind of like a just a shock moment, like, ah, he just kissed him. Mm. But it's so well done. It's like, wow, that just looks like two
right.
James Francos kissing.
We've gotten good at the actor playing two people. It's no longer just an obvious split down the middle with some scene
right.
you can see.
Exactly. You're like, oh, the back of his head, and that stand-in is way shorter than he should be to be playing another character.
Yeah, this feels like a really good example of when really that well became done. Invisible. It's very good. Mm-hmm. Here's all the woos.
Woo! 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 Woo!
All I could think of is he's got 3 days to travel. You do have to poo. You're going to have to poo.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to be in there.
I don't know. If you don't eat, you don't poo.
That's what I said. I didn't see him eat anything. I mean, the beans would have been the worst idea, but I didn't see the young clone eat
maybe
anything.
He never ate. That's a good point. All right. Yeah. I feel better.
Just drink. Just drink some water. You'll be fine. You have to pee, but that's all right. You can pee in one of the bottles.
Yeah, just pee. Go ahead and pee. Don't poo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I couldn't do it. I mean, I don't have really bad claustrophobia. But if I'm in a place where I can, we talked about this, I think, during the Die Hard walking through the vents thing. If I'm in a place where I can't turn around, even if I'm crawling, right. I'm going to freak out.
Mm. Yeah,
so that would have made me freak out.
I have too many muscle cramps not to have areas for me to stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Oh, my God. That just gives me anxiety thinking about a muscle cramp. That you
oh,
can't
you know, it just occurred to me the reason he sent that harvester after the transmitter. I thought it was just because he was just trying to be a dick to those guys and screw them. But it was because if he didn't, his launch would have been tracked and they would have known he was on his way.
They would have
right. Yeah.
Would have received him. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had to take down that communications array entirely. It wasn't like some kind of just like destruction for destruction's sake.
Yeah, I guess I don't know why I thought
really
that at
cool
the time.
There.
That's a meaningful.
I didn't think about that either until just now.
I thought it was because he was trying to give his future clone self a chance.
So maybe
I don't
so,
I
so
don't
that the next guy wouldn't have to deal with what he had to deal with.
I don't think he cares about all of those extra clones. Like that's the thing. Like I questioned a lot. How would I feel knowing there's a bunch of Randys in boxes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't really care.
As long as you don't activate them,
right?
They don't take on. I mean, then they're not. What am I trying to say? If you don't activate them, then they're not real, I guess. Right now, they're just dormant flesh. I guess. I don't know. Then you get into the whole, well, like, what in this future, when does life start argument begin? Like, when chicken and egg stuff. I mean, that's great because I love those conversations. And this is a.
I'm kind of here, though, with this. I'm pretty sure I would. I must hate myself. This is a good thought experiment. Could you imagine yourself if you had a, if like had a whole room full of you? I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd be punching myself. I don't like myself that much, apparently.
Why are you hitting yourself?
Yeah, I didn't realize how much I hated myself until I started that thought experiment, and I was like, yeah, I couldn't stand me. I would hate me.
It would drive me crazy to be just with you and nobody else. Like, yeah. Well, the humans need the camaraderie. Right.
Get away from my computer. That's my computer. Exactly. Get away from my stuff.
Exactly.
Clone 2.
All right.
So, Brian Dunaway, did you ever read The Time Traveler's Wife?
I watched the movie. Does that count?
No. I hear it's bad.
I don't know. I don't know. Why would you watch that movie?
I've never seen it.
I watched that movie, too, because it had time travel, and I wanted to hate it.
It had time travel. I know. It was about time traveling.
Yeah.
Well, I can't imagine that the movie really went too far in depicting the part of the book that I'm thinking of, which is where the main character encounters himself and spends time with himself. It's very particular. You would remember it if you'd read it, and leave it at that.
Oh. There's moments of that. They address some of that in the movie, but probably not to the degree of the movie.
I didn't know Mute had Paul Rudd in it. Sorry.
Oh my gosh, Scott.
I know. I got to get on this.
It's been on Netflix for like 2 years.
Mule has
Clint Eastwood.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So I heard. Hard to get though. Hard to watch it. All right. Time for this. The film sack checklist just handed to me. Movie character with the same name as the actor? Check. Got Sam and Sam. Nice job there, guys.
And pretty close on the last names, too.
Oh, yeah. True. Mm-hmm. Robot that is almost as grabby as Kevin Spacey himself? Check. And finally, breakfast space beans? Check. All right. Mm. All right. Daryl says no direct connections through Star Trek for our Trek connection. However, I would remind everyone that Sam Rockwell played basically a red shirt in Galaxy Quest. Which is as close as you're going to get to a parody of Star Trek. So there you go. Kind of a pseudo connection.
Pretty close, yeah.
Outside of that, there just aren't enough characters in this. I mean, or actors. There's just like four people.
Yeah, I usually whine about a movie not having any women or only having one woman. Mm-hmm. But I don't know where you could have worked her in.
Yeah. I mean, you had the wife, but... It's not the daughter. The same. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, and the daughter, yeah, that's true.
I mean, sure. This is a movie about one guy.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Yeah. Right.
For sure. But you got your actors. Well,
it's about one guy trapped.
Not having enough women in it.
Right.
Right.
And by the way, that lady who played his wife was Queen Maeve in The Boys. That's who that is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I looked that up and went, whoa, wait a minute. You don't look like her at all. Also, she has an accent here and doesn't in that, so I don't know if that's her real accent or she's really Irish. I didn't go that deep.
I think she's really Irish.
Okay.
Yes, because she was going back to Ireland, right?
Yeah, she's going back to
Ireland. That was the joke in the movie.
One day I'll be like Wonder Woman in this fake thing called The Boys.
Her name is Dominique McGilligott.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So that's Ireland.
How many McGilligotts do you know that aren't from Ireland? That's a great point.
That's right, exactly.
She's great on The Boys. Really good on there.
Oh, she was also in House of Cards, apparently, too.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Kevin Spacey connection.
He wasn't interested.
No, he didn't into it. Soundtrack grade, to give it an A for amazing. Already mentioned why. It's very good. Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. I think this time we should start with, I don't know, Randy.
Moon. A couple of really lonely dudes talking to the TV, and it talks back. Are you hearing this? Whoa.
Wow.
Just like a Saturday night at Ebbets
Home. Yeah.
There it is. There it is.
I knew it was coming. That participle would only dangle for so long. Dunaway.
Moon, like Sam Rockwell's butt, is full of gas and craters. Oh, the movie. Yeah, I liked it too.
Oh, yeah, we got Sam Rockwell butt in this. I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
And I pointed at the screen and said, look, a visual representation of the movie's title.
Yep.
Moon.
We got Moon.
But I need you to do what Brian Dunaway and I have both done on the beginning of this thing.
Well, I'm not going
to. Oh, man. All right. Well, with that note, let's go now to Brian Ibbett.
Moon, a marooned out of tune buffoon, presumes to check out a dune in the vacuum one afternoon, and soon he's feeling the gloom and doom of discovering a tomb that's like a multi-person womb full of cocoons. Hey, can you see Neptune?
Oh, wow.
Beautiful.
Look at all your oon rhyming. That's very good.
Yeah. Lots of oons. Slipped in a couple ooms, too.
A couple ooms.
How many, Brian Dunaway, how many O's in moon for you?
Well, I usually use three, but I'm
but you're
clever
that,
like
just
that.
Just that kind of guy, yeah. I get it. All right, well, that's all well and good, except now there's this. I was just handed this list of alternate titles. It was almost called, let's see, this one's a tricky one. Let me find it here. Here we go. It was almost called The Rockwell Files. All right, a little musical help.
Sam rocks well, Sam rocks very well. Very well. Good job.
Or Sons of Sam. Get it? Because there's so many of them. There's just like hundreds of them down there.
Oh, that's cool.
A quick email. This is from Danadendron. There you go.
Danadendron.
Yes.
I better go water my Danadendron because it's wilting.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Dan Anderdan. it's Dan Anderdan. Sorry.
Dan
All right.
Anderdan.
He says this. Another movie to add to your list, please. Phase 4 from 1974. Another schlocky 70s sci-fi B-movie along the lines of The Swarm on a lower budget, but with sentient ants like the ones from those Saturday afternoon movies you remember watching as kids in the 80s. Currently on Hulu and Prime, but expiring end of March. Oh, man. We're going to miss it. Hopefully it will come back soon to the streaming services you use for the show. Here's the second. Write that one down because Phase 4 sounds amazing. Second email this week. I got one from Adrian who says, "Hey, FilmSack guys, just wanted to check in. A while back, I went and got you guys four DVDs of the true classic Mac and Me. The movie has still never been on streaming. It will probably never be on streaming, which is why I sent the DVDs. Just wondering if you're ever going to watch those."
I'll do it right now.
Adrian, yes. The answer is we have never been great at when someone sends us stuff, and we don't really have a policy for it. It's like we don't ask for them, but sometimes people are like, oh, I found this thing, and you should watch it, and then they send it. And then it becomes a little out of sight, out of mind. I mean, I've mailed that to everybody. We all have our copy of it. Mine's sitting right over there. But we just freaking forget that we have them. So
we need to do a better job, you know, because it's very easy for us to say, oh, my God, look what just appeared on Netflix. We got to do this one while it's there. Mm-hmm. And we do forget about the ones that people have sent to us. So maybe what we need to do is just like say, all right, once a month, we'll lock in one.
Once every other month.
Mm-hmm.
one listener supported
once a quarter
submission.
That's
kind of what it happens when it happens, isn't it? Like once a quarter.
I mean, if we because
we got somebody sent us heavy metal and we need to do heavy metal.
Oh
for
my
this
gosh!
Show.
Yeah, freaking so John hard. Candy's in that thing. We gotta watch.
Yes, so, with his dork hanging out.
Exactly. And then one of the other problems we've run into is we've done this before where someone will send us a thing. It'll be 6 years and no streaming. And then suddenly that movie's streaming and we'll all go, ooh, we got to watch it because it's on streaming. And we forgot we had the DVD the whole time.
Right, yes.
So part of that is because we want you guys to have as much access to the stuff as we do.
That's true.
You know,
that is a good point.
That's a big part of it. So anyway, the point is we'll come up with a way to do this better. And Adrian, I have no problem bumping these copies of Sam and Me or Mac and Me.
And I always just want to say to people who want to send us movies, just think about whether or not we're going to want to watch the movie because
want to watch Mac and Me.
It's fine, but there's been this thing for the last decade where every now and then someone just sends us the worst movie they've ever found, and it's like, yeah, but I don't want to.
I found this under a car in a parking lot. Could you guys watch it for FilmSack?
Yeah,
it happens sometimes. But,
social engineering.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we'll let you know, Adrian, when we get around to that. Our next film, though, will be Final Destination, the first one.
The first Final Destination.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the first of the Final Destinations. There are like
Finally,
four of these,
Destiny.
Right? Four of them, I think? There are four, I think.
There's four of them. They're all streaming on Netflix. We'll see if you're going to want to go past the first.
Yeah.
I've never seen any of these movies.
I haven't either. This will be a first for me. So
sweet.
I know Dunaway's had plenty. You've seen most of these, right? If not all of them.
I've seen the first three. Okay. Four I have not seen.
All right. So we're gonna have some newbies and some not-so-newbies. Had everybody seen Moon before today? I think we all had.
Yes.
Okay. That's just the kind of nerds we are. Of course we all saw it. But Final Destination just kind of passed me by. Didn't really find much interest in it. We are going to be interested in seeing it next week. So next week, Final Destination, the first film currently streaming on Netflix. After that, if it's still around, 2012. And after that, if it's still around, Space Jam. They're both on Netflix as well. So we got a little bit of a fun...
Finally, Space Jam.
Yes, Space Jam should be fun. I'm actually looking forward to that now that I think about it.
Isolation at home is driving me a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I think we're all...
And I just want to give a big thankful shout out to Netflix for their... They're a traditional spring nutso documentary.
Yeah.
You already brought it up, but I can't help thinking back. Like, I guess it was 2 years ago now when that was Wild Wild Country. It made me actually want to watch Wild Wild Country again.
Mm-hmm. That was great. What a cool documentary that was. I need more of those, Netflix. More weird ass, grab me by the neck and not let go till you're done documentary series. I just love them. Really,
you know,
good.
Who could have played Joe Exotic? If he's, I think he's a little old now, but actually Joe Exotic's kind of old. Yeah. That's David Spade, and you know,
it would be a very comedic Joe Dirt style.
Exactly.
Joe. Wow, though he's got you're not wrong about the look, though. The look is right on. Oh my gosh, he looks like David Spade. Weird. Hadn't thought of that.
The Tiger King again is the title. If you haven't seen it yet, it's like the number one trending thing on Netflix for the last few days since it was released.
And the other guy, never want to go near in that documentary, and just never want to go near. I don't want to be in the same state as Jeff Lowe, the guy, the Vegas guy. I don't want to be anywhere.
Oh yeah, Jeff Lowe's creepy too.
Gives me the willies to no end. Cannot figure out why that drop dead hot chick is hanging with that dude. I don't understand. That you guys have to watch it. Final Destination next week, but between now and then, binge that thing and then come out on the other side dirty like us.
Other thought I had.
I don't like how you're asking Netflix to like grab you by the back of the neck and keep you until they're done. And then I don't know. You got this unhealthy relationship with Netflix right now that is disturbing me.
The worst part of this week is there was a big stimulus package passed, and there's some stuff for the arts in there. And people who are at home for 17 days, binging on Netflix, binging on Hulu, watching stuff on Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, whatever, are complaining that there's stuff in there to help bail out the arts. And I'm like, do you know what you're doing, what you're watching right now? Do you know where all this, do you have any idea why this exists? So just all I'm saying is be grateful you got these things. If this was 1989, absolutely, we would all be a lot more miserable at this stage.
And that was my original point. Yeah. I'm so happy that Netflix dropped this thing. It's so, you know, like it's real documentary entertainment, and it made me actually wish for other things that could have never been, like the podcast S-Town, which if you haven't listened to S-Town, you need to listen to S-Town, should have been one of these kinds of documentaries. It would have been so great if S-Town had been on video.
Mm-hmm. I agree. S-Town. Catch it. All right. I think we're done.
I'll probably look for the wrong thing on Netflix if I'm looking for S-Town.
You'll find downtown or something. all right. So join us next week for that, if you wouldn't mind. In the meantime, filmsack.com is the website. It still exists, and it's a place for you to go and find all our archives, all the links that matter. Everything's there. You can contact us there, all of it. So check it out, filmsack.com. You can also leave us voicemails, 801-471-0462, and you can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. The website also has a form now where you can just fill it out and send it without having to go create an email. You just send it. You don't have to put even an accurate name or email in there. You just send your message. That's faster and easier for you. That's at filmsack.com. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
You comfy?
We'll see you next time.
No.
No.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
What's for breakfast?
I'm pretty sure I'd be punching myself. I don't like myself that much, apparently.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.